Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, a rousing speech by Chris Hedges on what's wrong with the system, the sad plight of the American people, and why Donald Trump is not the problem and Joe Biden is not the answer. I hope you'll stay tuned. We have a big problem, says Chris Hedges. The problem is not Donald Trump, and, to say the least, the answer is not Joe Biden. But first, a little deja vu, courtesy of me. In November 2008, we had another election. It featured an ill-educated, insensitive, and not very competent Republican incumbent president, and a successful Democratic challenger. The two-term incumbent himself, George W. Bush, could not run for re-election, but Barack Obama's win felt like a repudiation of the Bush regime. The results also felt like a ringing endorsement of the highly progressive policies that people thought Obama espoused, especially universal health care with a public option, an end to unnecessary wars, and restoration of our civil liberties. Obama immediately set about betraying the hopes and dreams of most of the people who voted for him. From the start, he proved himself a loyal servant of Wall Street, the corporatocracy, and the national security state. Plus ça change, 12 years later, America has apparently ousted a Republican monster and replaced him with a Democrat. But unlike Obama, Mr. Biden, over many decades, has absolutely proven himself, beyond the shadow of a doubt, to be a loyal servant of Wall Street, the corporatocracy, and the national security state. A man who, unlike Obama, never even pretended to be a progressive. So unfit is our incumbent that scores of millions of Americans found themselves very reluctantly voting for the challenger. And now, in Tom Lehrer's immortal phrase, we are beginning to feel like a Christian Scientist with appendicitis. Here's a nice cartoon I saw before the election. A citizen is saying, "Why do I always have to vote for the lesser of two evils? Why can't I ever vote for the better of two goods?" Chris Hedges has an answer to that question, because the Democratic Party is approximately as evil as the Republican Party. Both outfits serve only America's real rulers, the corporatocracy and Wall Street. What we need, says Hedges, is radical reform of a thoroughly corrupt system, a system that despises and subverts the democracy it pretends to revere. Strong words, which is what we get from Chris Hedges at his best. And he is at his best in this lecture he gave in October 2020, just before our election. The lecture was sponsored by GCAS College in Dublin. Hedges delivered the talk remotely. We'll hear the first half now, and the second half next week.
So I title this talk, The Politics of Cultural Despair, and that comes from a book by the scholar Fritz Stern, who was a refugee from Nazi Germany, fled when he was 18, and then taught at Columbia University, and focused on the roots of fascism. What is it that propels a society or deforms a society to become fascist? And he targeted this quality of despair, which Hannah Arendt also does in The Origins of Totalitarianism, as do many great scholars of fascism. And so I take that title and use it as a kind of lens to look at the despair that is gripping the United States. The moral and physical decay of the United States and the malaise, what the French sociologist Emile Durkheim called anomie, has spawned predictable results. We have seen in varying forms the consequences of social and political collapse, During the twilight of the Greek and Roman empires, the Ottoman and Habsburg empires, Tsarist Russia, Weimar Germany, and the former Yugoslavia. There are voices from the past, Aristotle, Cicero, Fyodor Dostoevsky, Joseph Roth, and Milovan Gilas, who warned us. But trapped in a labyrinth of horror and blinded by our hubris and self-delusion, as if we are somehow exempt from human experience and human nature, we refuse to face the stark reality before us. Hundreds of thousands of Americans die each year from opioid overdoses, alcoholism, and suicide, what sociologists call deaths of despair. This despair fuels high rates of obesity, some 40% of the public, gambling, addictions, the pornification of the society with the ubiquitous images of sexual sadism, along with the proliferation of armed right-wing militias and nihilistic mass shootings. Those overwhelmed by despair seek magical solutions, whether in crisis cults such as the Christian right, or demagogues such as Donald Trump, or hate-filled militias that see violence as a cleansing agent. As long as these dark pathologies are allowed to fester and grow, and the Democratic Party has made it clear it will not enact the kinds of radical social reforms that will curb these pathologies, the United States will continue its march towards disintegration. These diseases of despair, which were the focus of my last book, America the Farewell Tour, will become more pronounced as the economic fallout from the pandemic drives larger and larger numbers of people into crisis. An estimated 300,000 Americans will be dead from the pandemic in December, a figure that is expected to rise to 400,000 in January. Chronic underemployment and unemployment, probably close to 20% when those who have stopped looking for work, those furloughed with no prospect of being rehired, and those who work part-time but are still below the poverty line, are included in the official statistics instead of being magically erased from the unemployment rolls. Our privatized healthcare system, which is making record profits during the pandemic, is not designed to cope with a public health emergency. It did not stockpile the ventilators, masks, tests, and drugs to deal with COVID-19. It has steadily reduced the numbers of hospital beds. 48% of frontline workers remain today ineligible for sick pay. Some 43 million Americans have lost their employee-sponsored health insurance. Food banks are overrun with tens of thousands of desperate families. Roughly 10 to 14 million renter households, or 23 to 24 million people, were behind on their rent in September. That amounts to $12 to $17 billion in unpaid rent. And that figure is expected to rise to $34 billion in past due rent by January. The lifting of the moratorium on evictions and foreclosures will mean that millions of families, many destitute, will be tossed into the street. Hunger in U.S. households almost tripled between 2019 and August of this year, according to the Census Bureau and the Department of Agriculture. The proportion of American children who do not have enough to eat, this same study found, is 14 times higher than it was last year. And this crisis accompanies the ecological crisis. There has been a 60% rise in global CO2 emissions since 1990. And all our marches, petitions, lobbying, appeals to the United Nations or the work of NGOs have made no difference. Our failure to cope with the greatest existential threat to the human species and most other species is matched by our failure to influence governing systems that have been captured by corporate power. The Democratic donor class made it abundantly clear, should Bernie Sanders have miraculously become the party's presidential nominee, they would join forces with the Republicans to crush him. The oligarchs preach the sermon of the least worst to us when they attempt to ram a Hillary Clinton or a Joe Biden down our throats, but ignore it for themselves. They prefer Biden over Trump, but they can live with either. Biden is a shallow political hack, devoid of fixed beliefs or intellectual or moral depth. He is an expression of the nostalgia of a ruling class that yearns to return to the pantomime of democracy. The ruling elites want to restore the decorum and civic religion that makes the presidency a form of monarchy and sacralizes the organs of state power. Trump's vulgarity and ineptitude are an embarrassment to the architects of empire. Only one thing matters to the corporate state. It is not democracy. It is not truth. It is not the consent of the governed. It is not income inequality. It is not the surveillance state. It is not endless war. It is not jobs. It is not the climate crisis. It is the primacy of corporate power, which has extinguished our democracy, taken from us our most basic civil liberties, and left most of the working class and working poor in misery. The corporate state seeks only the increase and consolidation of their wealth and power. Trump and Biden, doddering into old age with cognitive lapses and no moral cores, represent two sides of the same coin. Is Trump more dangerous than Biden? Yes. Is Trump inepter and more dishonest? Yes. Is Trump more of a threat to the open society? Yes. But is Biden the solution? No. Biden cannot plausibly offer change. He can only offer more of the same. And most Americans do not want more of the same. The country's largest voting age bloc, the 100 million plus citizens who out of apathy and disgust do not vote, will once again stay home. And this demoralization of the electorate is by design. Biden will only further fertilize the ground for an American fascism. In America, we are only permitted to vote against what we hate. Partisan media outlets set one group against another, a consumer version of what George Orwell in his novel 1984 called the 2 minutes of hate. Our opinions and prejudices are skillfully catered to and reinforced with the aid of a detailed digital analysis of our proclivities and habits, and then sold back to us. The result, as Matt Taibbi writes, is packaged anger just for you. The public is unable to speak across the manufactured divide. It is mesmerized by the fake descent of the culture wars and competing conspiracy theories. Politics under the assault is atrophied into a tawdry reality show centered on manufactured political personalities. Civil discourse has been poisoned by invective and lies. Power, meanwhile, is left unexamined and unchallenged. Political coverage is modeled, as Taibbi points out, on sports coverage. The sets look like the sets on Sunday NFL Countdown. The anchor is on one side. There are four commentators, two from each team. Graphics keep us updated on the score. Political identities are reduced to easily digestible stereotypes. Tactics, strategy, image, monthly campaign contributions, and polling are endlessly examined, while real political issues are ignored. This coverage masks the fact that on nearly all the major issues, the two ruling political parties are in complete agreement. The deregulation of the financial industry, trade agreements, the militarization of police, the explosion in the prison population, deindustrialization, austerity, support for fracking and the fossil fuel industry, the endless wars in the Middle East, the bloated military budget, the control of elections and mass media by corporations, and the wholesale government surveillance of the population. And when the government watches you 24 hours a day, you cannot use the word liberty. This is the relationship of a master and a slave. All have bipartisan support. And for this reason, these issues are almost never discussed. The goal is to set demographic against demographic, to blunt investigations into the machinery of power. This stoking of antagonisms is not news. It is entertainment, driven not by journalism, but marketing strategies to increase viewership and corporate sponsors. News divisions are revenue streams competing against other revenue streams. The template for news, as Taibbi writes in his book Hate Inc., the cover of which has Sean Hannity on one side and Rachel Maddow on the other, is the simplified morality play used in professional wrestling. There are only two real political positions in the United States. You love Trump or you hate him, which sums up the emotions of wrestling fans. But by voting for Biden and the Democrats, you are voting for something. You vote to endorse the humiliation of courageous women, such as Anita Hill, who confronted their abusers. You vote for the architects of the endless wars in the Middle East. You vote for the apartheid state in Israel. You vote for the wholesale surveillance of the public by government intelligence agencies and the abolition of due process and habeas corpus. You vote for austerity programs, including the destruction of welfare and cuts to Social Security. You vote for NAFTA, free trade deals, deindustrialization, a real decline in wages, the loss of hundreds of thousands of manufacturing jobs, and the offshoring of these jobs to underpaid workers who toil in sweatshops in Mexico, China, or Vietnam. You vote for the assault on public education and the transfer of federal funds to for-profit and Christian charter schools. You vote for the doubling of our prison population, the tripling and quadrupling of sentences, and huge expansion of crimes meriting the death penalty. You vote for militarized police who gun down poor people of color with impunity. You vote against the Green New Deal and immigration reform. You vote for the fracking industry. You vote for a segregated public school system in which the wealthy receive educational opportunities and the poor are denied a chance. You vote for punitive levels of student debt and the inability to free yourself of those debt obligations, even if you declare bankruptcy. You vote for deregulating the banking industry and the abolition of Glass-Steagall. You vote for the for-profit insurance and pharmaceutical corporations and against universal health care. You vote for defense budgets that consume more than half of all discretionary spending. You vote for the use of unlimited oligarchic and corporate money to buy our elections. And you vote for a politician, Joe Biden, who during his time in the Senate abjectly served the interests of MBNA, the largest independent credit card company in the United States, headquartered in Delaware, which also employed Biden's son, Hunter. Biden was one of the principal architects of the wars in the Middle East, where we have squandered upwards of $7 trillion and destroyed or extinguished the lives of millions of people. There are 1.8 billion Muslims in the world, 24% of the world's population, and we have turned virtually all of them into our enemies. Biden is responsible for far more suffering and death at home and abroad than Trump. And if we had a functioning judicial and legislative system, Biden, along with the other architects of our disastrous imperial wars, the plundering of the country by corporate power, the betrayal of the working class, would be put on trial, not offered up as a solution to our political and economic debacle. The Democrats and their liberal apologists adopt tolerant positions on issues regarding race, religion, immigration, women's rights, and sexual identity, and pretend this is politics. But these issues are societal or ethical issues. Yes, they are important, but they are not social or political issues. The seizure of our economy by a class of global speculators and corporations has, in fact, devastated the very groups the Democratic Party pretends to lift up. When Bill Clinton, for example, destroyed the old welfare system, 70% of the recipients were children. Those on the right of the political spectrum, and we must never forget that the positions of the Democratic Party would make it a far-right party in Europe, demonize those on the margins of society as scapegoats. The culture wars mask the reality. Both ruling parties are full partners in the destruction of our democratic institutions. Both ruling parties have reconfigured American society into a mafia state. It only depends on how you want it dressed up. The power of politicians such as Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, or Mitch McConnell comes from being able to funnel corporate money to anointed candidates. In a functioning political system, one not saturated with corporate cash, they would not hold power. They have transformed what the Roman philosopher Cicero called a commonwealth, a res publica, a public thing or the property of the people, into an instrument of pillage and repression on behalf of a global corporate oligarchy. We are serfs ruled by the obscenely rich, omnipotent masters who loot the U.S. Treasury, pay little or no taxes, and have perverted the judiciary, the media, and the legislative branches of government to strip us of civil liberties and give them the freedom to commit financial fraud and theft. In the midst of the pandemic crisis, what did our ruling kleptocrats do? They looted $4 trillion on a scale unseen since the 2008 bailout overseen by Barack Obama and Joe Biden. They gorged and enriched themselves at our expense while tossing crumbs out of the windows of their private jets, yachts, and palatial estates to the suffering and despised masses. The CARES Act handed trillions in funds or tax breaks to oil companies, the airline industry, which alone got $50 billion in stimulus money, the cruise ship industry. It gave a $170 billion windfall to the real estate industry, private equity firms, lobbying groups, whose political action committees have given almost $200 million in campaign contributions to politicians in the last two decades, along with the meat industry and corporations that have moved offshore to avoid U.S. taxes. The act allowed the largest corporations to gobble up money that was supposed to go to keep small businesses solvent, to pay workers. It gave 80% of tax breaks to millionaires and allowed the wealthiest to get stimulus checks that averaged $1.7 million. The CARES Act also authorized $454 billion for the Treasury Department's Exchange Stabilization Fund, a massive slush fund doled out by Trump cronies to corporations that, when leveraged 10 to 1, can be used to create a staggering $4.5 trillion in assets. The act authorized the Fed to give $1.5 trillion in loans to Wall Street, which no one expects to be repaid. American billionaires have gotten $700 billion richer since the pandemic, and Jeff Bezos, the richest man in the world, whose corporation Amazon paid no federal taxes last year, alone added nearly $72 billion to his personal wealth since the pandemic began. During this same period, 55 million Americans have lost their jobs. The molding of the public into warring factions works commercially. It works politically. It destroys, as it is designed to do, class solidarity. But it is a recipe for social disintegration. I watched competing ethnic groups in the former Yugoslavia retreat into antagonistic tribes. They seized rival media outlets and used them to spew vitriol and hate against the ethnicities they demonized. The poisonous images and rhetoric that were pumped out month after month in Yugoslavia eventually led to a savage fratricide. Those of us who covered the war in the former Yugoslavia see disturbing parallels in the disintegration of the United States. The United States is already plagued by an epidemic of mass shootings. There are death threats against critics of Trump, including Representative Ilhan Omar. There was an aborted plot by 13 members of a right-wing militia group to kidnap the governor of Michigan and storm the state capitol to start a civil war. A Trump supporter mailed pipe bombs to prominent Democrats and CNN, an effort to decapitate the hierarchy of the Democratic Party, as well as terrorize the media outlet that is the party's principal propaganda platform. The spark that usually sets such tinder ablaze is martyrdom. Aaron J. Danielson, a supporter of the right-wing group Patriot Prayer, was wearing a loaded Glock pistol in a holster and had bear spray and an expandable metal baton when he was shot dead on August 29th, allegedly by Michael Forrest Reinhold, a supporter of Antifa, in the streets of Portland. A woman in the crowd can be heard shouting after the shooting, "I'm not sad that an effing fascist died tonight." Reinhold, allegedly armed with a handgun, was ambushed and killed by federal agents in Washington state, an extrajudicial assassination that was common in countries such as Argentina and El Salvador when I covered the military regimes there. Once people start being sacrificed for the cause, it takes little for demagogues to insist that self-preservation necessitates violence. If we do not reintegrate those who have been pushed aside back into society to heal ruptured social bonds, to give workers dignity, empowerment, and protection, if we do not build a universal healthcare system, especially as the COVID-19 pandemic spirals out of control, where families are not forced to bankrupt themselves to pay for medical costs, if we do not provide stable employment, sustainable wages, job protection, and pensions, if we do not give a quality public education to all Americans, if we do not rebuild our infrastructure and end the squandering of our resources on war, if we do not halt corporate pillage and regulate Wall Street and corporations, if we do not respond with radical and immediate measures to curb carbon emissions and save ourselves from ecocide and extinction, we will ensure the rise of a Christian fascism. Political stagnation and corruption, along with economic and social misery, spawn what anthropologists call crisis cults, movements led by demagogues that prey on an unbearable psychological and financial distress, that champion violence as a form of purification. These crisis cults, already well established among followers of the Christian right, right-wing militia groups, and many of those who follow Donald Trump, who see him not as a politician, but as a cult leader, peddle magical thinking, an infantilism that promises if you surrender all autonomy, the road to prosperity, restored national glory, a return to a mythical past, order and security. Trump is a symptom. He is not the disease. And if he leaves office, far more competent and dangerous demagogues will rise if the social conditions are not improved to take his place.
Here we must pause a rousing and clarifying speech by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, activist, and now Christian minister, Chris Hedges. The Politics of Cultural Despair. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening to New World Notes. On the web, we're at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Illegitimi non carborundum, keep trying to live each day as though the truth were true, and please come back again for part two of Chris Hedges' talk next week. Till then.